answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
A second premise is that the goodness or badness of an action is not based on convention but actual reality. So what is good, what is bad, that depends on the doer, how he views it. Mm-hmm. You see, in the concept of usul or fiqh, if I'm not mistaken, they say that Allah has ordered...
The usul al-fiqh, you mean, principles of jurisprudence.
Yeah,
right.
Principles. That Allah has ordered us to do good, but that deed is not good because Allah told us. Mm-hmm. That deed is good in its essence, that's why Allah told us to do it. You see?
Okay.
So there are two points. Either because Allah said it, that's why it's good, or no, because it's good in its essence, that's why Allah told us to do it. Now, we as a human beings, we don't have a lot of concepts in thinking which is good, which is bad. Some of the times we come up with concepts that we do not know it's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
But when Allah tells us something that do this, it's good. It's not because He's telling us to do, that's why it's good. It's because it's the essence of that action is good. That's
right.
Why Allah recommends us to do that action.
Okay, so in this way, we cannot say that all the Muslims go to Jannah, Jannat al-Firdaus in the other world.
Yes.
So, and there might be some people who do not believe in any religion. They believe, for example, in a metaphysical power like God or superpower or something like that, but they do not necessarily believe in any religion, but through their good deeds and not violating the right of others, they might go to Jannah. But not, for example, as you said, we can say the upper levels of Jannat al-Firdaus, isn't it?
So here the question was like in regards to disbelievers.
Yes.
So we have to see that the disbelievers are of two kinds. One is ignorant and the other one is not ignorant, but due to circumstances, he was not able to reach the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And because of that, they both of them are treated differently. So there is one person who had all the means to find the truth, but did not find the truth, ends up dying. He goes to hell,
mm-hmm.
you see, because he had all the means, he had all the concepts, and he knew that there is right religion out there, but he did not follow up. He did not work on it, and therefore his abode is in hell. That is in regards to a person who is a disbeliever, but an ignorant one. But then there is one person who couldn't manage or who couldn't reach to the proportions of truth. And there Allah says that it's up to him to forgive him or to reduce his punishment or so, depending on the circumstances that it is there. From the verses of the Quran, we do see that Allah says that this kind of group that were trying very hard and till the end of time did not reach the truth, Allah would forgive them. Here, Allah is knowledgeable in this matter of what He will do with this kind of disbeliever. So we had one simple case. We do not want to judge anyone, but we have some traditions in where it says that if you are a Muslim, for example, and if you do not know the Imam of your time, you die the death of Jahiliyyah.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see this concept is that a person does not try to find out if the Imam, if there is an Imam or no, and then he ends up dying the death of Jahiliyyah. But then there is one that hasn't, is not open to this kind of scenarios where he can be able to realize if the imams exist or no. He is somewhere isolated.
Yes.
You see? So from him, his judgment with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is in Allah's hand of how he would deal with this kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
You see, different from what we see in non-believers.
That's right.
So we have one person I just followed up. He's a French philosopher that started to work on from zero to see like in beliefs. So we know that we had some philosophers that say that because I think I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because I am, that's why I think.
Yes.
So he's saying that the wujud, the existence of me, is not a reality.
Yes.
You see? But then afterwards, let me find his name. He's a French. In regards to beliefs, there are stages of beliefs where we can say that this person is a believer or non-believer. There is the stage of belief by force.
René Descartes' philosophy, isn't it? I think, therefore I am.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So Descartes, the French philosopher, according to his own words, is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
In his biography, they have written that he began his philosophy from doubt.
Mm-hmm.
He doubted all that he knew and began from zero. He made his own thought a starting point and said, I think, therefore I am. After proving his own existence, he proved the spirit and likewise the existence of the body and God became definite for him. Gradually, the issue of choosing a religion arose. He chose Christianity, which was the official religion of his country. But he also said, I don't say that Christianity is definitely the best of religions, but that exists in the entire world. What I say is that among the religions that I'm currently seeing, Christianity seems to be best. I have no conflict with the truth. Perhaps there is a religion in other parts of the world that is superior to Christianity. Incidentally, he mentions Iran as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that of a country about which he lacks information and does not know the religion of, he says, what do I know? Perhaps there is a religion in Iran that is better than Christianity. You see? So here we come to say some people cannot be called unbelievers.
Yes.
They are somewhere in between, believers and unbelievers.
They are agnostic, isn't it? They do not know, for example. They say that we do not know.
Yeah, but it's not like only they do not know.
They
have
atheists.
Reached a point of trying.
Uh-huh.
So they cannot be called Muslims, but there is a term used as dispositional Muslims.
Uh-huh.
So if they would face those scenarios,
uh-huh.
they would definitely have accepted Islam.
Right. Okay.
But because they did not reach those scenarios, they did
yes.
not. And so here we come back to our original questions. Do disbelievers do go to heaven or hell? How are they judged? So we have some traditions where we see, for example, Hatim Ta'i.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
I know.
We see because of his actions,
yeah.
We have a feeling that Allah would kind of position him in a good place.
He was not a Muslim, but he was a generous, charitable man.
Yeah, charitable
right.
person.
Okay. Right.
Of which they say that there are two ways. So one is that he would be given a good position, you see? And the other is that he would be sent to hell if
yes.
he had all the methodologies and the abzar, the tools, but did not accept Islam. But he would be, his punishment would be like lowered to a way
yes.
that even in hell, he would somehow, they would say that he would get a kind of a protection
okay.
from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this sense.
That's right. Thank you very much, Brother Suhail, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين
حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
With the participation of Palestinian Scout Associations and children under 16 years old, Palestinian resistance factions organized a rally this Saturday in front of the UNICEF headquarters in Damascus to show solidarity with the children in Gaza. This after the representatives of international organizations refused to accept the children's letter, pushing them to publicize their message instead.
The Israeli army deliberately bombed hospitals, including Al-Ahli, Ash-Shifa, Al-Quds, and the Indonesian. All the hospitals were put out of service because of the Israeli and American warplanes that kill and mutilate bodies.
We demand UNICEF to fulfill its responsibilities in helping protect civilian infrastructure, such as schools, hospitals, and water stations, and to ensure the provision of basic medical and food supplies for Gaza's children.
The children staged a performance on the massacres committed by the Israeli regime against kids in Palestine. They also chanted slogans and carried banners condemning war crimes committed against children and demanded the removal of the blockade imposed on Gaza.
Palestinian children amidst the rubble remain steadfast in the path of resistance. We will not surrender and will only bow before God. The Palestinian child fully understands that resistance is the only and optimal choice for the liberation of Palestine.
We are here to support the children of Gaza, and we call on the United Nations to support them, provide milk to them, and to help us stop attacks on hospitals and schools as they are safe zones for children.
The children affirmed that future generations will increasingly embrace resistance as the sole path to reclaim their occupied lands and to restore their legitimate rights, especially after they have witnessed the total failure of the international community to stop the bloodshed in Gaza.
Every child in the world must have access to medical care, clean water, healthy food, and a safe environment. But the children of Gaza don't even know if they will live to see another day. Yet, with innocence and resilience, they resist the Israeli tyranny. Ibrahim Wahdib, Damascus.
Dubbed Earth and Freedom, the latest demonstration in support of the people of Gaza was staged in Rome's northern suburb of Monte Sacro on Friday. The initiative, organized by a string of groups including the Student Collective for Palestine, the anti-Zionist movement in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and some housing movements, took place as Israel resumed air raids in Gaza after a seven-day pause in fighting.
Students from across Italy have been rallying in support of Palestinians because they are aware of the ongoing genocide in Gaza, the largest open-air concentration camp in the world. Meanwhile, the whole of the international community stays silent.
As bombardments have resumed in Gaza, we are trying to organize as many initiatives as possible in support of the Palestinians. Today, we are also calling on Carrefour to end its complicity in Israel's slaughtering of Gazans.
Also on Friday, the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement launched the Boycott Carrefour campaign, calling on supporters of Palestinian rights in Italy to boycott the international supermarket chain Carrefour. The multinational retailer has been often accused of supporting Israel's illegal settlement activities in the West Bank, and it has been described by some activists as, quote, a genocide facilitator.
The West must stop the Zionists if it really intends to help the Jews. Only a Zionist sick mind can call Palestinians human animals, a language which incites genocidal actions. It's time to drop the policy of controlled chaos in the Middle East.
The war has killed more than 15,500 Palestinians so far, including at least 6,150 children. Due to Israeli bombardment, about 60% of homes in Gaza have been destroyed, while at least 50,000 families are now homeless. Hundreds of demonstrations have taken place in solidarity with Palestinians in Italy since October 7, and more will be held in upcoming days in different Italian cities, including Turin, Genoa, and Oristano. Max Civili, Rome.
Crowds of Yemeni protesters rallied in the streets of the capital Sana'a, reaffirming their staunch support for Palestinians against the Israeli occupying enemy.
The masses of Yemeni people who came out today confirmed the continuation of our full support for our brothers in Palestine. This includes the distant efforts until the liberation of Palestine and the eradication of the Zionist enemy.
Protesters also expressed their readiness to support the Palestinians at all costs and provide the Palestinian resistance with money and men until decisive victory over the Israeli regime is achieved.
The people came out today like a flood to confirm that we are returning to the war with the Zionist entity. We are also here to direct a message to the Zionist enemy that its return to the war means that the end of its existence, the end of this entity, and the end of this enemy.
According to Yemeni military officials, Yemen is expecting that the U.S. and other Western powers would try to take advantage of the Red Sea. The officials have warned that any act of hostility by Israel or the United States will be met with unprecedented force.
We already knew that the U.S. would try to move in on us from the Red Sea, and for that we have prepared tremendously. We have prepared for them in a number of locations and in a number of fields. Our armed forces are prepared. Our Navy forces are prepared.
The U.S. Department of Defense has sent several warnings to Ansar Allah movement not to get involved in tensions in Palestine amid a brutal Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. However, as the leader of Ansar Allah, Abdel Malik al-Houthi, stated, Yemen is not the nation that takes its orders from the U.S.
The resumption of Israeli airstrikes against the besieged Gaza Strip means the Yemeni army will resume its military efforts against the Israeli regime by launching drones and ballistic missiles against the Israeli entity. This also includes the capture or seizure of any Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
The ongoing boycott campaign against pro-Israeli products has set in motion a transformative period for Western businesses in Pakistan. Faced with a resounding call for boycott, pro-US and pro-Israeli companies find themselves compelled to make strategic adjustments. In response, these outlets have slashed their product prices by up to 50%, a desperate measure to bring customers back to their shops. However, the people of Pakistan remain steadfast in their commitment to uphold the boycott as a demonstration of solidarity with the oppressed communities in Gaza.
I am fully behind the boycott against pro-US and pro-Israeli companies. It's heartbreaking to witness the ongoing war crimes in Gaza, and it's time we use our consumer power to send a strong message.
Boycotting is our way of expressing solidarity with the innocent lives affected by the war on Gaza. These pro-Israeli and pro-US companies must understand that we won't support businesses linked to such atrocities. It's time to prioritize humanity over profit.
The people of Pakistan vowed to continue their boycott campaign till the complete ceasefire in Gaza.
These companies need to be held accountable for their affiliations with the US and Israel, and our collective stand can make a real difference.
The boycott has cast a shadow over the sales of superstores selling Western products in Pakistan, prompting a strategic shift in their offerings, giving more prominence to locally sourced items.
In response to intense boycott pressure, pro-Israeli companies are offering substantial discounts as a strategic move to regain customer trust after aligning with the US and Israel. This shows the complex interactions between geopolitical developments, consumer behavior, and national socio-political structures. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Just as the Palestinian people on October the 7th made the world pay attention to their plight, the global civil society is playing a major role in realizing justice for Palestine. A senior Hamas delegation visiting South Africa has stressed that people's sincere voices and actions are making considerable changes in that regard. One of the key changes noted by Hamas is how the narrative about Palestine has changed this time. As part of the visit by the senior Hamas representatives, they will meet with civil organizations, activists, as well as officials here. While the South African Parliament has passed a resolution to sever ties with the Israeli regime, the government appears reluctant to implement that decision.
The Israeli narrative, it has been defeated. A lot. The people, they start asking their own governments about what is happening, why you are supporting those criminals of war, the Israelis. And after 2 years today, we are witnessing the winning of the Palestinian narrative, and that is because of you. You have marched into the streets and told the international community what is the realities over there, and because of the innocent bloods which has been shed by those criminals inside Gaza.
South Africa also faces the challenge of its citizens who are part of the Israeli military force. Despite legislation banning that, the country is yet to prosecute any of these mercenaries. Hamas says governments need to take action. They say many countries have approached them to retrieve bodies of Israeli troops killed in Gaza.
A lot of countries around the world came to us asking about their people. I don't know why. Is someone is Israeli when he is killing Palestinian, he became suddenly a French or an Italian or a Russian. Suddenly they came, they are negotiating how to get our people. Why you are allowing your people to fight or to kill Palestinians? If they are your people, you have to stop them from participating in this terrorist organization, the so-called IDF.
While Hamas is committed to the current temporary ceasefires and exchange of prisoners, an end to violence will only be achieved through a comprehensive agreement which includes the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Al-Quds.
We are talking about a political conflict, and this political conflict cannot be solved by military tools. They have attacked the Palestinians now for more than 100 years, and the Palestinians insisting on struggling, on raising their voices, they have to accept that we have ambitions, we have dreams of independence, of freedom and dignity.
The Israeli regime has threatened to expand its deadly bombing campaign to southern Gaza when the temporary truce ends. But the Palestinian resistance is determined to stand steadfast in the face of any such adventurism. Hassan Siriep, Cape Town.
Martyrdom, sacrifice and commitment. These are words deeply familiar to the Iranian people. They have been under heavy Western pressure and unilateral illegal sanctions since the victory of the Islamic Revolution 44 years ago.
The world's powers have used all means to stop Iran from achieving progress, including the assassination of its scientists, specifically those who would have helped the country to make nuclear advancements. The assassinations, which have been orchestrated by the U.S. and implemented by the Israeli regime, have been condemned by many countries around the world. In the capital, Tehran, a gathering was held on Wednesday to commemorate those martyred scientists. The participants say that the Israeli regime does not want a powerful Iran.
We are here on behalf of the people and the country of Bolivia to pay our respects to the martyrs of Iran and all of those who were killed by the imperialist attacks of Israel, which is trying to prevent the progress of the people of Iran and its scientists in the nuclear field for its own interests. We believe that Iran should continue its scientific development in the nuclear field because this issue is important for the progress of any society.
America planted the Zionist regime in the region as a base for the West. For this reason, the West tried from the beginning to make this regime always more advanced than the countries in the region. America and Israel targeted the Islamic Republic, which has been trying to gain power and independence. The independence of the Islamic Republic of Iran angered the West. That is why they try to weaken Iran in any way possible and stop Iranian projects at any level. One of the most important things they tried was assassinations. These assassinations were carried out by Israel Mossad, which is known as the largest terrorist organization in the world.
Iran is a country that, despite international pressure and the assassination of its scientists, has become stronger day by day and has shown that it has never retreated from its ideals and values. Farzana Shuryun, Tehran.
People took to the streets of Pakistan to express their solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine who are confronting Israeli atrocities.
Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
Whoever talks about humanity, they must stand with the Palestinian women, they must stand with the innocent Palestinians who are demanding for their right to defend themselves.
Being a nuclear power, we should stand with Israel, with Palestine, because it's not only the responsibility of Iran, it's the responsibility of all the Muslims.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people has been observed annually on November 29th since 1977, based on a call by the United Nations.
I want to show my solidarity and unity with the people of Gaza and Palestine. I believe that, inshallah, one day the Aqsa and Palestine will be free. Genocide happening in Palestine, children are being killed, women are being killed, and I just want to say that we want justice.
In Pakistan, the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people is marked by various events and ceremonies that reaffirm Pakistan's solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Marking the International Day of Palestine in Pakistan serves as a platform for reinforcing enduring unity between the two nations. It symbolizes a shared commitment to common values such as justice, peace, and realization of the rights of the people of Palestine. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Palestinian Embassy in Moscow on Tuesday held a ceremony on the occasion of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. In the meeting, Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov read a message by President Vladimir Putin to his Palestinian counterpart Mahmoud Abbas on the occasion of the Solidarity Day. The message said the creation of a sovereign Palestine within the 1967 borders is a key condition for resolving the Palestine conflict. According to the Russian diplomat, the Russian Foreign Ministry has engaged in intense efforts to help resolve the humanitarian situation in Gaza through cooperation with Iran and other countries.
From the very beginning, we advocated for a cessation of hostilities in order to channel this unprecedented escalation into political context with the goal to agree on an immediate de-escalation of tension and establish negotiations on humanitarian issues our contacts with Iran on Palestine take place at all levels, between presidents and foreign ministers. Iran and Russia have powerful positions in the Middle East to help the Palestinians restore their right to self-determination and the creation of a sovereign state.
On the eve of the Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, Moscovites came to the Palestinian embassy and brought toys, flowers, and posters. In 1977, the UN General Assembly decided to observe November 29th annually as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. On this day, in 1947, the Assembly adopted a resolution on the partition of Palestine.
We are here today in solidarity with our people. For 75 years, Palestinians have suffered under Israeli Zionist occupation. Gaza has become a genocidal site in full view of the world, and no one is doing anything to stop the massacre of Palestinians. We demand our own Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
President Putin called it Russia's sacred duty to help people in Gaza. Since the latest escalation began, Russian aircraft have delivered over 57 tons of humanitarian aid to the population of Gaza. Humanitarian aid is being transferred to representatives of the Egyptian Red Crescent Society, who send it to Gaza.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people coincides with Israel's deadly war in Gaza and its intensified atrocities against the people in the occupied territories. However, the determination of Palestinians to resist the regime's aggression is increasing day by day. Marina Kartonova, Moscow.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Gaza doctors seized by the Zionist regime say they were used as human shields. Doctors are being detained, interrogated, and used as human shields in the Zionist regime's campaign on hospitals. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, a doctor who worked at Ashifa Hospital in Gaza during the Israeli regime siege and bombardment of the complex has described how Israeli troops used them as hostages as they invaded the hospital and later detained the head of the hospital, along with more than 20 other medical personnel from Gaza, in what one Palestinian medic called a war on hospitals. Following weeks of intense bombardment of the largest medical complex in the northern Gaza Strip, the Israeli regime military approved an evacuation request for the staff and patients to the southern enclave, submitted in coordination with the World Health Organization and the United Nations. When a UN-led convoy of ambulances arrived at a checkpoint set up by Israeli regime forces on the road connecting the northern Gaza Strip to southern areas, they were stopped, searched, and interrogated for 7 hours before the head of Ashifa Medical Complex, Dr. Mohammad Abu Selmia, was detained along with around 5 other doctors. Even before evacuation, Abu Selmia was held in custody and interrogated twice by the Zionist regime's officers inside Ashifa Hospital. Marwan Abu Saadeh, the doctor who was interrogated with him, spoke to Middle East Eye about the horrifying hours when the Zionist regime troops helped them and used them as human shields inside the hospital. Abu Saadeh, the head of the surgery department at Ashrafa Hospital, said, "For several days, Israeli aircraft kept bombing different buildings and departments of the hospital. Quadcopters were shooting directly at people, including patients and displaced persons. People were killed inside the hospital. They besieged the hospital for 5 days before they stormed its departments. They kept us in certain areas and threatened us with getting targeted. When they stormed the ground stores, they used us, the doctors, as human shields to enter and search them. They found the technical maintenance employees there and interrogated them before they detained them. While moving from one department to another and searching the different offices and rooms of the hospital, the Zionist regime forces took several doctors with them." Abu Saadeh continued, "We felt that we were hostages and used to protect Israeli troops. They took me and Dr. Abu Selmia and interrogated us. They did not use violence with me or Dr. Selmia, but they interrogated Dr. Abu Selmia twice." The doctor said Israeli regime forces questioned him and Abu Selmia about the presence of any resistance members or hostages in the hospital's offices, or if there was any activity being conducted by resistance forces in Ashrafa. Abu Saadeh said, "We said no because we have never seen any Hamas members there. They besieged us in the hospital for 5 days, and on the eve of the truce, I returned home, and patients and some medical staff members were evacuated to the south." On November 22nd, the Palestinian Health Ministry said it was informed by the UN that they had coordinated with the WHO to evacuate the patients from Ashrafa Medical Complex and move them to southern areas. In a statement released by the ministry on the following day, its spokesperson, Ashraf Al-Ghudra, condemned the detention of medical staff members as they were evacuating the city and declared a complete halt of coordination with the WHO regarding the evacuation of the rest of the wounded and medical staff until they submit a report clarifying what had happened and until the release of the detainees. The statement read, "We were surprised that the convoy was stopped at the occupation checkpoint that separates the northern Gaza Strip from the south for 7 hours. Dr. Muhammad Abu Selmia said, "The patients, their companions and the medical staff that accompanied them were met with excessive force by Israeli occupation forces. They ended up detaining a number of them, including the head of Ashrafa Medical Complex." According to Qudra, Abu Selmia had not left the hospital or seen his family since the beginning of the war. He said in another statement, "He refused to leave the hospital until the last patient was evacuated." Recently, the Gaza government media office said the Israeli regime authorities had extended Abu Selmia's detention for another 45 days for further interrogation. On the day after the detention campaign, Israeli regime forces bombed the power generators of the Indonesian hospital in the northern Gaza Strip. For weeks, the hospital has been targeted by aerial and artillery shells that have devastated large parts of its departments and resulted in the killing and wounding of hundreds of patients, displaced people, and healthcare professionals. Fadel Naim, a doctor who had witnessed the attack, said Israeli quadcopters killed patients and displaced people inside the hospital. The doctor and dean of the Faculty of Medicine at the Islamic University of Gaza told MEE, "The quadcopters were hovering at low altitudes over the heads of people inside the courtyards of the hospital. There was heavy shooting on people. Many doctors and healthcare professionals have been interrogated and detained." Every Palestinian is subject to detention, but they detain doctors in particular thinking that they would get information that might prove their allegations about the resistance. They interrogate them to get information and details about other people. Naeem said that since the beginning of the attack, he had witnessed or heard of many doctors getting killed or wounded. He said, "Many of our colleagues were directly killed. Every day, we hear the name of another doctor who was killed. Many of the doctors who were once our students were also killed or detained." In the Al-Auda Hospital in the northern Gaza Strip, Adnan Radi, a doctor, said Israel had declared a war on hospitals in the Strip. He said, "I call this the war on hospitals. They wanted to launch this war on medical staff. But all the allegations of the occupation were proven false after they stormed and searched Ashifa and the Indonesian hospitals. I swear to God that I have never seen one armed person inside any of the hospitals. We were attacked and the hospital was directly bombed. We paid a high price for insisting on continuing our work despite the persistent attacks. We lost colleagues, doctors and patients. The hospital was attacked although we did not have anyone affiliated with Palestinian factions inside. We did not even have displaced people taking refuge at the hospital like other hospitals. We only had patients, their companions, and healthcare professionals." Radi, whose home in the Arimal neighborhood in the center of Gaza City was destroyed by the attack, said he could not leave the hospital and evacuate to the southern areas of the Strip, even during the pause in fighting. Al-Auda Hospital is currently the only place in the northern areas of the Strip providing healthcare services to pregnant women, he explained. At least 26 healthcare professionals from Gaza are currently detained by the Zionist regime, according to Gaza Ministry of Health.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. Once again, we are here at U Station. My brother, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. I'm so happy to be here. This is Sayyid Mustafa.
Me too. And this is Beta. And
yeah, it's good to be back. You know, I love discussing the different topics we always talk about.
Yeah.
So what are we discussing today?
Actually, the topic is really interesting, and I think it's a really common phenomenon in every nation and every country that you go through. You can feel the fear of death, you know?
Oh, that's a pretty morbid topic.
Yeah, it is. I think, first of all, we have to talk more about the concept of fear itself, mm-hmm. you know, the feeling that we flee towards some, I don't know, scary situations or dangerous situations. What about the fear itself? Is it an innate emotion, or it is something that we can learn from other people?
Sure. And I've mentioned before, I think on the show, that, you know, I'm studying psychology. So
yeah.
Part of our studies, we do study emotions and how people feel. And fear is definitely a very, very important emotion for human beings. First of all, it's actually a very helpful emotion if it's, of course, kept within certain limits. For example,
yeah.
What do I mean? What I mean is that when we have a certain amount of fear, it allows us to survive, right? When we have the fear of getting hurt, you know, that takes us away from things that are, for example, painful for us, right?
Yeah.
So fear is actually a built-in human sort of emotion. It's part of our nature. If you look at it from a genetics point of view, genetically, if you go back thousands of years, human had fear as well. For example, let's say they were hunters or they were being hunted by animals. So it's part of like our everyday life. You can't like escape fear.
Yeah, I know. Okay? It's something unavoidable.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same way as death. You know,
right.
Fear of this inevitable things together. And the thing is, in my opinion, fear of death itself is not something that we can define simply.
Mm.
Because this fear is more perplexing than what we think, okay? When you're afraid of something, you are not afraid of exactly that thing. You're
right.
Afraid of not knowing the consequences and the, the implication of that thing.
Definitely. I mean, death is something that most of us have not experienced. And I'll tell you why I say most and not all.
I get that. Minor people who have the, kind of same experiences.
Near-death experiences. I'm going to get to that. But
nice
I was saying,
one.
A big part of us fearing death is just not knowing what's going to happen, right? Something that we don't experience, we fear that.
For example,
if I were to tell you, you're a doctor, right? If somebody's getting a surgery for the first time,
they'll
probably have certain amount of fear versus someone who's done it 10 times.
Yeah, for sure.
The only problem with death is you can't die 10 times, right?
Unfortunately.
But I was saying there's actually a very good show that airs on Iranian state TV on Channel 4 every Ramadan. Have you seen it?
Yeah,
it's called Zindagi.
I've seen it.
Zindagi Pase Zindagi, which translates to life after life. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it.
How often have you seen it?
I don't know. It was really interesting for me, unfortunately.
I've probably seen like a lot of the episodes, you know,
nice.
Over 2 to 3 Ramadans.
Nice,
yeah, I try not to miss it. And one of the things that I learned through that show, you know, you hear about people's near-death experiences and how they die. And, you know, they go into another world, for example, they'll experience all sorts of different type of things. They'll meet different personalities. Some people meet
so
imams.
Weird.
Some people
meet
their dead relatives. Some people have very fearful experiences, by the way. But once you hear what's really going to happen from people's mouths, I think that gives you some level of assurance. And of course, we believe, in our imam's words and our prophet's words.
Yeah.
So I think those should help reduce the fear, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. It's like that.
Let's just go for a break and then we will we'll come back. Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Okay, so we're back. And the last question I just asked you was about, you know, knowing what our prophets have said, what the imam has said, what the Quran, that should help reduce our fear,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And if you go through, for example, Western countries and ask them about the experience of death, they are somehow more afraid than other people, than normal people, than Muslim people,
right.
To be frank, yeah. And, it was reassuring that this knowledge and awareness that we have towards death from our religion, and specifically our infallibles, peace be upon them, it's like a weapon for me that I have towards this fear that I have for death. Everybody is afraid of death because it's something unknown. It's something, I don't know. Another reason I think that people are so much afraid of death is that because of the development that we had specifically in medical content, it's like that we can prolong the process of life, unfortunately. And sometimes you have an incurable disease. Nowadays, with so many methods and ways, we can give you, for example, 5 years of being alive more than what you're meant to. And this is one of the reasons that people are afraid of death. Because the stage at the end of life stage is becoming kind of full of pain. And painful.
I think a lot of that fear is to do with the fact that you are leaving this world, right? You're leaving everything that you know.
Your attachment.
Everything that you know, you're going to have to leave it behind, right? There's nothing that you really... And then, if you were to ask me, do I personally fear death? There's definitely a part of me that has that sort of fear of the unknown, right?
Even though
I know, yes, what the imams have said and I've watched this TV show... but when I think about I will have to go through that experience, it definitely makes you think. I don't know.
It is natural, I think. You're a human being, so, and as human beings, we have emotions. And, you know, this is really natural to be afraid to death because you know nothing about it. But one of the ways to make yourself sure is that beautiful narration from Imam Rizal, if I'm not mistaken, peace be upon him, that if you are true, he was telling those people who opposed the idea of afterlife, and he was telling them that if you are true, then if you do bad things or good things, nothing will happen. But if you are true, then if you do good things, you're doing something for your afterlife.
Right. Just, I think basically someone had come to him and said, hey, I don't like believe in God.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly
believe in an afterlife. And, you know, prove to me that, you know, can you prove to me that God exists, that there's an afterlife? And he was really arguing with him and he wasn't being convinced. And at that time, what you said, that's what the imam said.
Exactly.
You know, like if you're, let's say, wrong about the afterlife and after, you know, all those things, then you'll have a huge loss on your hands, right?
Exactly.
Once you die. Whereas if we're wrong, let's say there is no afterlife, we've still lived a decent and good life. There isn't any loss to us. That's actually, it's actually called Pascal's Wager as well. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, I've never heard of it.
Pascal was a philosopher that also raised that same sort of idea in the Western world, that even if you can't prove the existence of an afterlife or a God, but I think we're going to get off topic if we start discussing Pascal.
Yeah, exactly.
And
the point is,
I was going to say we'll go quickly for a break.
Yeah.
And then
we
can
go for
we'll
that.
Back and discuss it.
So, welcome back to your listeners to You Station. We were discussing the afterlife, which was a bit of the topic, but it is one of the best methods to listen and relieve your fear of afterlife or death. You know, when you do good things, you have something to rely on. And you're proud of yourself because you have this possibility that whenever you meet Allah Almighty in the afterlife and the Day of Justice and Resurrection Day, you have something to offer. You have something to show himself and tell him that I did something, look, you know, and we need it. Deep in our nature, we need this confirmation from Allah Almighty.
I think definitely, and the way we live our life also has an impact on how we view or fear, how we sort of look at that. You mentioned, like, you know, in Western countries, for example, they sometimes appear to be more afraid of death, right? And that has a lot to do with how they're viewing the world. For a lot of those people, they say that, you know, once we die, we're going to become worm food. Right? That's what they say.
Yeah, this is so dark.
So they say,
I don't even want to listen to that.
Well, they say
so
everything
empty.
That we have is this life, right?
Yeah.
And everything that we can achieve is right now. So therefore, life is everything that you have, right? The example that they'll give is they'll say, you know how there's a candle flame?
Yeah.
Once it's like blown out, that's how your life is. You're a candle flame, you're going to be blown out. There's going to be nothing left of you. But of course, that view, I can tell you this much, will definitely create not only fear of death, but fear of everything in life.
Yeah.
It creates
And mostly when I, you know, go talk to these kind of people that they have this mindset, they are like in a state of denial of death. You know, they know the bitter truth that they're going to face it one day because it's an unavoidable fact. But they try to deny it. They say, okay, this is life. I'm going to have fun this night and the other night and the night after it. But deep in their heart, they are so depressed.
Or they're depressed or they're in denial of reality or truth, right? And I can tell you this much, when we're younger, sometimes we see that we're going to live forever, right? Well, at least that's how I used to feel when I was like 18 or 19. You know, now I'm like about 39, right? So when I was like 18 or 19, that's about 20 years ago. Man, I shouldn't be telling my age to the whole world. But anyway, I definitely felt like I was going to live forever, right? I didn't think that much about death, to be honest with you, right? I think it's something.
I'm a bit different.
Huh? Well, it depends. I think today's world has become so much darker that even the youth is like thinking about dying and death and these kind of issues, right?
You know, I'm 19 years old right now. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I think a lot about death because I feel like it's near. It's really close to me because, you know, because my field of study, I'm always watching those corpses everywhere. And we're working on that. So It's like, okay, I'm seeing death every day.
So do you actually work with dead bodies?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you, what could would you, has that helped reduce the fear of death for you by working with dead people?
No. It always feel strange to be there and see those bodies being cold there, out there. And it feels like, oh my gosh, we are running all this way in this world.
For those people, I would say whose faith or who may not really believe in necessarily an afterlife, I would definitely say it's not difficult to prove these things. You know, it's not difficult to prove that you have a soul. It's not difficult to prove that there is something more beyond this life. You may not agree on all the details,
right? Yeah, I get what you mean.
But it's easy to prove that. I don't think it's very difficult to prove that.
Yeah. There is a verse in Holy Quran that says that everybody knows the truth of life, the afterlife, and everything. The only reason of their denial is that they want to do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly true for all the people in every era. And everyone knows the truth. But we want to deny it because we want our benefit, you know, in this world. And we have to somehow spread our horizons. We have to open our eyes sometimes. And this is the only way that you can somehow deal with this fear of death and
it's amazing.
Understand it.
It's amazing how we deny something so real, which is happening around us all the time.
It's cruel. We are very cruel to ourselves.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't really take it into account when they're planning for their life, by the way, right?
They don't.
Even, unfortunately, I would say even a lot of the media that exists today, for example, people like Elon Musk and a lot of the latest science and technology, they'll talk about developing techniques to live forever or to extend their lives forever, right? That's what they're trying to do, not realizing it's a very impossible task, I would say, to live forever, right?
I'm going to tell you that this theory of living for a lifetime, for a long life, shows the nature of human being, that we are eternal. We have a soul that is eternal and it has a tendency towards this eternity. And why are we trying to cheat ourselves to keep this body for that eternity?
Exactly.
Leave it alone. Yeah. Go there.
What Elon Musk, you're saying what Elon Musk needs to understand, we are going to live forever.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't have to be in this form of the physical body.
Yeah, this is only a transition.
This is only a transition. And if we get stuck in this transition, we're only going to end up harming ourselves and not planning for the real future. So thank you so much for amazing insights on death, I would say. I really enjoyed that. Dear listeners, please continue listening. Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi
wa
barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif,
Ya
Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.